You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Monday, 1st of June. We've got local vehicle sales data for May due 2:15 this afternoon. I'm Simon Brown coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Nkunza Sanlam Private Wealth. We had Dis-Chem results that saw revenue up, but everything else red. Market not impressed. And an update from Spa, a horror update from Spa. That share price is back at 2010 levels. We're chatting with Grant Webster from 91. Emerging markets and how they've become more resilient to outside shocks. And then we'll be chatting with Joltech. The Section 12J has hit its 5-year maturity, mandatory maturity. Now we have the tax issues. What are options there for investors? This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more global opportunities through their partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management. Morning headlines, MoneyWeb, Glencore Merafe halts layoff plans as NERSA throws smelters a lifeline. The energy regulator approves electricity tariff of 62 cents per kilowatt hour for the ferrochrome industry. That's good for Afrimat. Business Day, S&P affirms SA's rating, an upgrade on the cards if South Africa continues to fight inflation and reduce debt. Morning markets, the US was green, S&P 0.2 and Nasdaq 0.4 higher on Friday. The East mostly green, Sydney the exception, couple of points to the red. Tokyo is up 1.1%, Hong Kong 0.8 higher, and Tencent up 2.7%. Commodities mostly green, gold futures 4,547, Brent 9307, platinum 1,945, and palladium the red 1,386. The rand is 1,622, Bitcoin 73,800, and top 40 opening call at green open 420 points or 0.4% higher.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Nkunza Sanlam Private Wealth. Nick, appreciate the early morning. Dis-Chem results out early Friday. The revenue was up 9.3%, but HEPS and dividend both down 17% and some change. A lot of talk around evolving the group from retail pharmacy to integrated healthcare provider, spending for the future. They talk around seeing the benefits in FY27. Your thoughts, because the market seemed unconvinced by all this supposed good news, but bleak in numbers.
Yeah, morning, Simon. And start of the second half of the year. Here we go. looking at those Dis-Chem results, I mean, as you said, you know, revenue up 9.3%, income was up 9.6%. I mean, that's generally sort of solid top line, movement growth in what is a constrained consumer environment, yet share down 8%, dividend was cut as well. But I think, you know, the group operating profit, that was down 11.9%, so it wasn't heavy. They talk about investing in an ecosystem and lovely jargon here, not 330 million rand committed to, I think they said, the ex-Bigly Labs innovation. What that quite is, I don't know. but yeah, I guess, I mean, overall, I mean, this is basically like a spin now for later stories. So, you know, overall, I think you gotta wait until results come out a later the next time round, because right now they look like that's a little bit of a value trap at the moment.
Yeah, it does look good. Although I just put up the clicks chart, and wow, I mean, there's a stock that from 400 of last year down to 230. And at 5-year lows. Talking around value or complete lack thereof was the Spa update. There's a stock back at what, 2010 levels. They're expecting HEPS to be around 40 to 60% lower. I mean, this was a horror update. I don't know that the market was expecting much, but they didn't like it, and it really was bleak.
Yeah, I mean, no easy way to put a horror story. I mean, this was very, very ugly. As you said, share crashing 16% on trade on Friday. As you said, levels we last saw a decade and a half down. I mean, this is down now 60% so far this year. I mean, they warned the headline earnings will roughly halve. So you're right, I think the market expected earnings to halve. And yet revenue actually grew a little bit. But I mean, this is pure margin pain, Simon. I mean, this is, Black Friday discounting costs them. You've got ongoing problems in KZN. management changes and a few other things. Is I guess the question is, I mean, is SPAR cheap at these levels? I mean, do you buy it? Value trap. I mean, it's cheap for you. I mean, this isn't a market that's mispricing a good business. This is an operational turnaround, management instability. I mean, there's a whole lot of things in the noise there. I guess if I was looking at it, I'd wait till the interim results out, I think, in a week or two's time.
Yeah.
But overall, this was ugly.
I thought it was cheap in the mid-60s. It's now sub. Mm. And to be clear, that was March. In fact, it was early April. But then, I mean, to the Spurs go the winners, right? I mean, Boxer and ShopRite, surely. And because, I mean, we've got Pick and Pay struggling as well. And we are buying, I mean, consumers are buying their groceries somewhere.
I mean, Pick and Pay down in kind as well, wasn't it? About 7%. Mm. I mean, you're down 7%, didn't even look at it because it was the better faring of the lot. I think this does tell, firstly, that you know, there is pressure in that inflation is going to be a problem. Who gets to pass it on to the consumer? Mm. I would guess the 800-pound gorilla in the room, which is ShopRite with 4% odd margins. I mean, they've certainly got the ability to get a bit of a margin squeeze, which looks like it's happening in this space right now. Certainly now with our friends in Pretoria raising rates as well.
Yeah.
This is going to get tougher for the smaller ones, and it's going to get tougher for the guys like this who don't have that margin to sort of capacity to play with.
And the Boxer margin was also at north of 5%. We'll leave it in the
corner. Very nice.
Sanlam Private Wealth, appreciate the early morning time. Let your money benefit from experience with Stanlib Asset Management. Find out about Stanlib Global Select Fund, which follows an investment discipline that has delivered results for 3 decades.
MoneyWeb now on the money.
I'm chatting with Grant Webster. He's co-head of Emerging Markets, Sovereign and FX at 91. Grant, appreciate the time. Historically, if we look back over the last couple of decades, in fact, if we go all the way back to the 1998 crises, EMs really have sort of borne the brunt of shocks, supply shocks, whatever they might be. But in more recent years, we really have seen a fair bit of resilience coming out of the broader emerging market basket. Fair comment.
Yes. Hi, Simon. Thanks a lot. I think it's very fair. I mean, look, over the last 20 plus years, typically you see demand side shocks, as we call them, you know, so that's where economies slow down and, you know, there's less demand for goods and central banks have to react by cutting rates. And then the reverse happens. Activity picks up, inflation picks up, and you go through this normal cycle. A supply shock is very different because it's hard to control it. It comes out of nowhere. You know, if you think of Russia's invasion of Ukraine or COVID, you know, it was really damaging to economies. And typically, you wouldn't expect emerging markets in particular to handle that very well, but they've been doing a great job in the last 5 years or so.
And this really is. I mean, what we've seen is sort of improving fiscal policies. We've seen better looking current accounts. We're seeing sort of more proactive central banks. And I would throw ours into that a lot as well. It's not any one feature. It's just kind of like a general feature of EMs getting relatively better at being economies, I suppose.
Yeah, I think, look, we do generalize, of course. But on the whole, these economies are doing very well. There's a few I can mention where there's still some worries, but what happened was in 2013 and 14, we went through this episode, which we call the taper tantrum, where the US started to consider, you know, tightening policy. And at that time, emerging markets in general were running big current account deficits, which means they were importing far more than they were exporting. They had big fiscal deficits and loose monetary policy, so their interest rates were low. And that's kind of a recipe for disaster if you don't have, you know, sort of the rest of the global economy on your side. And so the taper tantrum was really painful, but it did mean that over the following 4 or 5 years, emerging markets were forced to correct. I mean, South Africa is a case in point here. If you think back to that period, South Africa ran a 6% current account deficit in 2013. And by the time you got to 2019, that had reversed and South Africa was running an enormous current account surplus, which meant that we in South Africa were exporting far more than we're importing. And if you're doing that, then you're actually, you're lending dollars instead of borrowing dollars. So it puts you in a much safer and more secure position. And you can say the same now for many emerging markets. They're really they really do look like the adults in the room when you compare them to some of the developed markets out there, ironically.
Well, that was going to be my next question. Developed markets with rising yields, sovereign debt levels in many cases plus 100% of GDP, in many cases higher volatility. That sort of traditional distinction between emerging market versus developed market risk is kind of fading away.
Yeah, you know, in the past, obviously, emerging markets were viewed as far more risky than developed markets. And even today, you know, amongst the sort of developed market investors, there's that perception. And it is fair to say that developed markets have much more liquidity. You know, their markets are really deep. They have huge savings pools. And they've generally got strong institutions and good policymaking. Mm. But a lot of this has been tested, you know, because since the global financial crisis, and particularly through COVID, they borrowed an enormous amount of money. And they did so at a time when interest rates were at the lows, close to zero, in fact, in many cases, because of financial repression. I remember central banks drove interest rates lower by buying their own bonds and cutting policy rates. And so they were borrowing at low rates. And that's all changed post-COVID. Yeah. And with energy prices rising, they've had to hike interest rates. They're now funding themselves at much higher levels, and they've got these huge debt burdens. I mean, the UK is a case in point here. Mm-hmm. And what was fascinating recently, if you look at the UK yields, long-end yields are now trading above where Hungary trades. And Hungary, you know, is not exactly a bastion of liberal democracy, or liberal, shall I say. They did go through an election recently with the opposition won, and it's been an amazing turnaround. But still, it's quite stark.
But that then comes in, and I've chatted with many folks, colleagues of yours and others, who've been talking the emerging market investment thesis. And it talked, a lot of it's been around the valuation, and there are absolutely that thesis stands. But this kind of gives sort of more credence to it, where there's the valuation, but there's the structural as well, which is sort of adding yet more flavor to that investment thesis.
Yeah, so yields in emerging markets on average, as I say, we do talk in averages a bit here, but they're about twice the level you get in developed markets still. So even though interest rates have been rising in developed markets, on average, they're still relatively low if you compare it, especially to a country like South Africa. And if you adjust for inflation, because inflation in the emerging markets isn't that high, you know, there's a perception that it's going to be a lot higher than it is in the developed markets. It's really not. You know, look, if you look at where inflation in the US and the UK is compared to emerging markets like South Africa, you know, maybe EM has slightly higher inflation. So once you adjust for that, the real rates in EM are particularly high. And again, that's a source of strength because it gives them a buffer. You know, it means that they are attracting capital from abroad, from investors who want to have a return higher than the level of inflation, because that generally is going to protect you against any currency weakness. That's attractive. And so you're seeing inflows into emerging markets based on these higher yields.
Well, if that's Grant Webster's co-head of Emerging Market, Sovereign and FX 91. Appreciate the time.
The Standard Flexible Income Fund is designed for pre- and post-retirement income and capital preservation needs. Retire without regret with Stanlib Asset Management.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting with Jonty Saxon, he's a partner at Joltech. Jonty, appreciate the early morning. Section 12J essentially was sunsetted back in June 2021, but there was a five-year period to wind down because of the duration of the various different funds. That now kicks in this month, and there are tax implications. We got a benefit on the way in, but there is potentially some pain on the way out for investors.
Exactly, Simon. Investors, when they invested, they got a really handsome tax break. They could deduct 100% of the investment. Mm-hmm. But when they exit Section 12J, they need to account for all the investment value and any returns as capital in nature. So assuming you invested $1 million, and let's assume you only got your R1 million back, $1 million falls, 40% of your $1 million falls into a taxable income, and you'll pay tax on it. So effectively 18% of whatever you invested, you pay back to the receiver. But there's a really nice arbitrage. So you got 45% on day one, the time value of money of that 45%, and then minus the 18% on your way out. Of course, still quite a handsome return.
Yeah, I hadn't thought of that. Of course, you've got 45 on the way in, and the 18% is assuming you're in that top tax bracket, because now they're basically saying that the cost of the investment was zero. There are options out there. Talk to me. You've got the Section 12B solar investment, and I've heard around it. I've never really dug deeply into it, because one could move into that. How would that work, and what is it?
So what it is similar to Section 12J. It's a tax-deductible investment, but the capital can only be used for solar. So what we do as a business is people invest with us. We take their capital and we acquire solar assets. We fund them, and then we sell electricity to businesses. And by doing that, they get a tax deduction of 100%. Mm-hmm. If you add some gearing, you can get a tax deduction of 200%. So effectively, you invest $1 million and you get a deduction of $2 million, depending on the fund. Mm-hmm. But what this does for a Section 12J investor is you have this tax responsibility when you exit the 12J. Well, if you invest a small portion of your original capital into a 12B, it squashes the tax. In most cases, up to all of it.
Yeah. I got you on that. And then how is this? So it's investing into solar. We get the demand from that. Is this fixed term? Is this an income flow coming from the solar? Because obviously, as you're producing, you're selling. How does that fund then effectively work?
Yeah, so effectively, as a business, if you look at us as a whole, we have got 2 billion rands worth of solar assets under our administration or management.
Mm-hmm.
And there we charge businesses monthly or quarterly for electricity that we've produced and they've consumed. This electricity in almost all cases is cheaper than Eskom, so that they love doing business with us. But that's revenue, and that's revenue that's been brought into different type of partnerships, which is profitable. And then we pay out those profits to investors on an annual basis. So you're in for a long term, you're in for 10 years, or 8 to 10 years. You receive annual income every year. Being in for 10 years is largely irrelevant because of the high upfront tax benefit.
Yeah.
You know, in many cases, investors invested 100 rand with that and they got the 100 rand back in the same year because of the tax benefit.
So if
you're in for 10 years, but you got your money out and you're deriving those benefits. But so we're seeing a lot of Section 12J investors investing into our Section 12J exit income fund, where a portion goes into a 12B investment, a portion goes into a private debt fund. They get a lot of diversification, really nice income over the next 8 years. And it's just a nice way to just, in a smart way, lower your tax responsibilities.
Gotcha. And I hadn't realized you've actually got a product effectively for this. Do we have any sense of how much 12J money is coming due this month? I mean, I imagine it must be billions.
Yeah, so the estimation is around 14 billion rand was invested into Section 12J. At the end of the month, every Section 12J fund that still exists has reached its maturity.
Mm-hmm.
Investors will start getting exited, I hope.
Mm-hmm.
Some will be in for much longer. But I would estimate of the 14 billion, a few billion have already been exited over the last few years because they were able to. We're looking in the region of 10 billion rand being exited at the moment. I would estimate, and that's about just around 1.8 billion rand in revenue that SARS will be collecting, you know, assuming everyone's in the highest tax bracket.
Yep. The numbers are giant. We won't go into details, but of course, you can do a Section 42 rollover. You can also do RA contributions. We'll leave it there. John T. Sachs, partner at Joltech, really appreciate the time this morning. And that's our poll today. Did you have a 12J product? I mean, I really liked the idea. I thought they were great. And then Treasury effectively sunsetted them 5 years ago. But let us know what your experience was. Have your vote, have your say. LinkedIn. That's it for today. On Friday, we were chatting with Skulk Low, PSG Old Oak. We're talking Lewis results. Strong growth across all the numbers. We asked you if Lewis was a good investment at these levels. It was pretty much evenly split. A third of you saying, great business. Another third saying you needed to take a look. And the last third saying, with these current rising rates, you worried about the risks. This podcast is brought to you by Stanlib Asset Management. Invest in more certainty to navigate volatile market conditions. We're live every weekday morning. The MoneyWeb website in the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast just after 7.
Thanks to my team, Eddie Nobokhle, Nicole Sabut, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow. Anchor Capital issuing 2 active ETFs.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.